Welcome to the B2B Marketing and Copywriting Podcast, the show where we combine the best, the latest and greatest info in the world of marketing and merge it with conversion copywriting insights. I'm your host, Linda Malone, certified conversion copywriter and founder of The Copy Works. But before we get started, a quick reminder to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you enjoy what you hear, please consider leaving us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us bring you the content that you love. Now let's jump into today's discussion. My guest today is Adam Costa. Adam is the co-founder of FunnelCandy.com. He is a business consultant and has advised over 140, more than 140 companies, including Amazon, Dropbox, and Wired. And he sold three of his own businesses. He's also lived in 30 countries, and he says he's run multiple ultra marathons in sandals, which sounds insane to me. And so today, Adam is going to talk all about how he does research that ties all that research into growing a business and how he understands and gets to understand his website's visitors, so the websites of his clients, and how he works with all these insights. So let's jump right in. Adam, welcome, and thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Linda. Happy to be here.
Yeah, and I wanted to start with, in your bio, in your intro that I read, you talk about multiple ultra marathons. First of all, running an ultra marathon is crazy, and I used to be a personal trainer. I don't know if I mentioned that to you. So I worked with marathoners, and ultra marathons is a whole different category, and in sandals was like the clincher when you said, can you talk about what kind of ultra marathons were you in and why didn't you wear proper footwear is my question.
Great question. Well, I never ran when I was younger. A lot of people say, oh, I was into cross country in high school. I never ran. The only thing I ran was my mouth. And it wasn't until I was 30 years old, I read a book called Born to Run.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And anybody who's gotten into running has probably read that book. It's an amazing book. Even if you don't like running, it turned me into a runner. So that's a pretty good endorsement. Totally got into it. Started running. I still remember the day I had first run 2 miles. And I ran literally in the front door. And I told my wife, I said, oh my God, baby, you'll never guess. I ran 2 miles today. Like, to me, that was just amazing. Got hooked on it. Started ramping up the mileage a little too quickly. Banged up my ankle. Took a break. And then I realized that the reason I had banged up my ankle was because my footfall wasn't right. And a lot of times that happens if you're wearing shoes. So if you land on your heel, that could put added extra impact onto your joints. And that can create a lot of problems. So I just actually bought the sandals that the guy from Born to Run had used in the book. And he started a company with it. It's called Luna Sandals. Highly recommend them. I've worn them almost exclusively for the past 10 years. Started running, ran my first, my first half marathon. Then I ran a marathon, which is 26.2 miles. Then I did a 50K in Vancouver, which is 31 miles.
Wow.
And then really went on the deep end and did a 50-mile trail run just outside of San Francisco. That was like 7 or 8 years ago. And it's funny, I was wearing sandals in that one as well, like all the times I run. And San Francisco's, you know, San Francisco. It's a little different. People get weird. It's very hilly. Yeah. So there's 8 hills or peaks, if you want to be dramatic, that you had to run over. So go up and down, up and down, up and down. And towards the end, I'm running by in the aid station. There's a bunch of volunteers there, and they're all dressed up in like ridiculous outfits. Like it was the Beta Breakers for anybody interested in like local races. And this guy, no joke, is dressed up as a cow. And he saw me coming and he's like, guys, come here. Look at this guy. He's running in sandals.
What do these sandals look like? Just because when you said sandals, I'm thinking flip flops. It's like, there's no way like he ran in those. They must be very supportive.
No.
They must be made for running, right?
They look exactly like flip flops, but then they have a strap around the back. So they're called huaraches,
okay.
Which is the traditional running sandals that they use in like Mexico and Latin America.
Wow. Okay. Better you than me is all I can say. I mean, I'm into fitness, but... Never. What's the longest? So ultra marathon, isn't that like the ones that go like, wasn't there one goes through Death Valley that's like 100 miles? Like insane.
Yeah, that's called the Badwater. And that's, you run in Death Valley on the pavement in July, I think it is.
People die doing that. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's pretty crazy. And even to run that, I think you have to already have run several, like 100 miles before.
So and be certified insane, I would think.
That too. I mean, that's a prerequisite for all of these.
Be certifiable. Well, on to something a little less scary. Your company, Funnel Candy, the first time I heard the name, I'm like, all I could picture, and probably people tell you this, is Willy Wonka, right? It's like, or maybe I'm the first person to tell you this.
The first, I like it.
Yeah, well, funnels and candy, you know, and my mind does not work like normal people's. So, but the whole idea of the name is so interesting. How did that come about and how did your business come about?
Yeah, great question. So my wife and I, we had run several of our own companies over the years, and then we had worked as conversion optimization consultants for a company called Conversion Rate Experts, which they're like top in the field in the conversion optimization space. And what that is basically is you gather feedback from your audience, and then you make changes to the business, the funnel, or the website, and then you split test your recommendations to make sure they are in fact growing the business. Mm-hmm. So we were running our own companies, but then we were also working with them as well. And during like a 10-year period, we advised over 140 clients, including big ones like Amazon or Dropbox or Wired, and then a lot of really fast-growing startups as well. And we grew every single one of them that implemented our advice. And the beautiful thing about that was that we learned how to actually talk to the market and understand what they were thinking, so that by the time we actually started to write copy, design pages, set up split tests, we were already pretty sure that we were going in the right way. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people would split test their ideas as like they would start with that, like, hey, let's just start testing button colors or whatever. Right. But we're like, no, because we did all this research and we're pretty sure that this is going to work. We just need to validate it.
Yeah.
And so because of that, most of what we recommended ended up winning in split tests. And it also taught us, due to a ridiculous amount of feedback with like thousands of split tests, what works and what doesn't, and mm-hmm. how to do that repeatedly.
Yeah.
So we took all of those insights, and then we, air quotes, retired a couple years ago. We sold all of our companies. We retired from consulting. If you are looking for conversion optimization, Conversion Rate Experts is an amazing company. I don't get paid for saying that. It's just the truth. And we started Funnel Candy really as more just a way to share what we know, to share our experience and our expertise with other people who may not have been able to get access to that otherwise.
So you actually no longer work with companies? It's just you teach other people how to do what you did?
Right. So we put everything that we've learned on the research side of things into a free 7-week course that anybody could sign up for. And then over the course of 7 weeks, you get two lessons that says, hey, here's the things you need to do. And then here's what you can do with those insights.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because we're going to put the links to everything in our show notes too, so people can sign up. Can you talk a little bit about when it comes to research, now as a conversion copywriter myself, I know that's something that I always tell my clients, 80% of what you're paying for is the research, because there's so much that you need to know before you put a single word down on the paper. And I've had a little bit of pushback for people who are not familiar with that. It's like, well, can you cut back on the research? And what are your thoughts on that when people ask? I'm sure you've been asked that.
Yeah, I've fielded that a lot of times when I was a consultant. And what I would tell people is, look, I've been doing this a very, very long time. I can skip steps, to be honest, because I know all these angles. Like, I get your business model. I'm pretty sure the main objections are going to be A, B, C. I'm pretty sure the main selling points are going to be X, Y, Z. And if we combine these two with some copy, it'll work. And I can definitely get you some singles and some doubles. But if you want a home run, let's do the research. And it's not that much extra work. And also, I would even take it a step further and say, it's not just about writing copy. It's about creating a culture within your company that, hey, let's actually go talk to our prospects. Let's go talk to our customers. Let's talk to our salespeople. Let's talk to our users. Let's find out what they're actually saying. Because that's great for copywriting, but it's also great for strategy, positioning, building a better product, knowing what features you should be adding and why. There's a lot of really good benefits that come from that. So I would say it's a foundational part of any successful business is to obsess over what your prospects and your customers are thinking.
Yeah. And it changes over time too, especially if you come out with something new or the industry changes. I mean, there's so much behind it. Because with me, it's like I'm working with a client now who I did the website like 3 years ago, but a lot has changed. And I just reached out and said, hey, you know, we need to talk to your customers again. And I think that talking to people is the most important part, and especially in talking to them versus sending them like a survey, because you can get some answers through a survey and tell me your thoughts on this. But I think, you know, when you talk to somebody, especially if you're on a Zoom call, which I always do, I try to do if people are open to it, because you can see that body language. You can see when you hit on something that really upsets them or that they're annoyed about.
Yeah, I completely agree. But I would also say that one is not necessarily better than the other, because they both serve different functions. If you're mm-hmm. doing a face-to-face conversation, obviously you can only do so many of those. Right. With a survey, you can do it at much more scale, and it's easier to keep all of that content in like a database that you can go back to. So my recommendation is always do both. And I'm happy to dive into like all of those a little bit later.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you next, what types of research do you do? Because I know you mentioned on the Funnel Candy website about doing heat maps and doing like, can you talk a little bit about a few of the things, the tactics that you use for research?
Absolutely. So, the few that you had already mentioned, we could talk about user tests. So user tests are incredibly viable and valuable as a way to get a lot of feedback. In general, you'll only want to do 5 user tests. Studies show that 5 user tests will uncover 85% of usability issues. So anything more than that is going to be diminishing returns. Mm-hmm. So what I recommend doing is, with your user tests, you can either reach out to people on your existing list, or you can use a third-party service like usertesting.com, where you just pay X amount of dollars and they'll recruit people in your market to go through and use the site. Mm-hmm. When you're doing these user tests, it's helpful to have a series of questions and tasks that you want people to go through. So a very simple one would be, hey, you're going to go to our website and start at the homepage. Now, the task that I have for you today is I want you to go through the funnel as far as you possibly can without buying and speak your thoughts out loud. Let me know all the things that you like, all the things that you feel could be improved. Most importantly, let me know any questions that arise as you're going through the process. Mm-hmm. And now the hardest part of conducting a user test, once you've said all of this, if you're doing this live with somebody, the hardest thing is to just shut up and not say anything. Because mm-hmm. we all, like when I first started doing this, I've done hundreds of these in person. You always want to jump in and like explain yourself or help them if they're getting stuck on a page. And it's like, that's not the point, because you can't do that live for every website visitor that you have. So you need to just be quiet and take lots of notes.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that I would do. User testing is great because it uncovers the usability issues. Like for mm-hmm. example, if they're using a particular device or browser and a button doesn't work, right. That's a great example. It's also a great way to hear the words that's going through their thoughts. Like you actually get to enter into the conversation already going on in their minds. And that's incredibly valuable. And thirdly, I would say that a user test, people, to your earlier point, people will reveal things off the cuff that they wouldn't think to articulate in a survey. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a survey is much more considered. They've thought about it. They're writing down their response. The user test, they might just be like, oh, that's funny. You're like, what's funny? Like, what was that? And you can dive deeper into these things.
Yeah.
So for those three reasons, it's really, really useful. So that's user testing. Another one that works really well are email surveys. Now, an email survey is one that you send out to your existing prospects, your existing customers, and depending on your business model, you can also send an email out to people that were customers that canceled. Mm-hmm. So particularly if you're like in SaaS or something along those lines where churn is important, you can certainly do that as well. In each of these surveys, you can ask probably 10 to 15 questions. We've got a whole slew of them in our course and on Funnel Candy. You can put 10 to 15 questions together, and then you email a link out to your list. And you say, hey, if you could take 10 minutes and answer these questions, I'll enter you into a drawing.
I was going to ask if it was an incentive, because people just don't like to do this.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, nobody wants to do anything for free.
Right.
But we all want something for free, which is kind of interesting. So with the incentive, I'm glad you brought that up. I'd recommend doing an incentive that's not related to your business. So like an Amazon gift card is an easy one, or an iPad or a Kindle, something like that.
Yeah.
The reason why is that if you're offering your product as an incentive, you're also positioning it in such a way that the people who will raise their hand and take the survey, they already like your product. So you're only going to kind of enter into an echo chamber. You want to actually talk to people who are like, yeah, I didn't like your product and here's why.
Right.
Those people aren't going to be incentivized if you're offering your product, even if it's for free. So that's an important thing to consider.
Yeah.
And then once you've got the email survey up and running, you can also set up website polls. So if you use a tool like Hotjar, which there's a free plan there, you can have Hotjar that appears on key pages in the funnel. So depending on your funnel, this could be a homepage, this could be a landing page, a cart page, checkout page, product page, et cetera. And you can ask different questions on different pages. So a real simple one, which almost feels like cheating, is on your main sales page, if somebody starts to navigate away, you have a question that pops up and says, hey, before you go, quick question. If you didn't buy today, could you tell us what stopped you?
Do people answer those? Because I see those absolutely. A lot.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the response rate, I get this question a lot. The response rate varies. So it could be anywhere from like 0.1% all the way up to like 10%. And like most things in life, like you could overthink this or you could just set it up and then see what type of response you get. Mm-hmm. But I would argue, even if you get five responses to that, those are five living, breathing human beings who are thinking about buying your product or service.
Right.
And they just told you why they decided not to buy.
That's gold.
So as a copywriter, that is gold, right?
Yeah. I mean,
so even if you only get five responses, that's infinitely better than zero.
Yeah. And that, I love Hotjar because you can see for people who haven't used it. I mean, it's like you can see where they're moving their mouse and you can see where they're getting stuck, how long they're spending on certain things. Because I know when I go to a website, if something doesn't work, chances are I'm just going to bail. I mean, I'm not going to try to figure it out, you know, spend a lot of time on it or contact the person, unless it's someone I know. If it's a website and I know the person who's running this company, I'd say, because I've had people do it to me. It's like, do you know on this page that this link doesn't work? And so that's helpful, but most people don't. And they're just going to, you know, not continue. So, So that's user testing. Now, the usertesting.com, that it used to be, was it free or it was kind of a minimal amount of money, but I think the price has gone up considerably. Like $50 a person or something. If you want to, it might even be more than that now. I'm not even sure. I haven't used it.
Yeah, I don't know either. It was $50 a couple years ago when I checked.
Okay.
So yeah, you can use that service. I usually recommend a third-party service of some sort, just because with user testing, it can take a long time to schedule those times to talk to people.
Yeah.
Whereas with that service, you just pay and you walk away and you can set up some other stuff like surveys and polls. So there's a lot to that as well.
Can they record too? Instead of you having to guide them through, can they just do it on their own? Because that's how I thought it worked. I haven't used it, so yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. So with usertesting.com, there's another benefit of it as well. If you're really busy, you can pay for it and they will recruit the users for you. They will, all you have to do is put together the questions and then walk people through what they need to do. They'll set up the session remotely, record it, and then that way you get these shiny recordings that actually show real people using your website in real time.
It's so funny because as you're talking, my very first job out of college, I actually have a degree in like nutrition and product development. And I started working in a test kitchen and we would develop products and hold focus groups. And so we would be behind this one-way, you know, window. And so everyone's saying, it's just so funny because I didn't even think about this until you started talking about it. And so people be testing the products that we created. And to hear them just, you know, like what the person who was conducting the focus group would say things like, you know, what would you suggest for the people who are developing these products? And sometimes they say, find another job. Like you have to, you'd have to really have a thick skin. Sometimes I'd walk out of the room. I'd be so frustrated, you know, but it was great. And that was all food products. So that's something where people really have, you know, emotional attachments to different food stuff. And it was crazy. But yeah, to have somebody go through your website and kind of pick apart like what's not working, but you have to know that. Otherwise, how are you going to know, you know, what to address?
Absolutely. There's something I've always told people when it comes to user tests, the best user tests are the ones that bring a tear to your eye because they hurt so bad, but then it becomes a tear of joy because now you know exactly what you need to work on next.
Yeah. Because as with copy, I'm sure you know, you do this too, is you want to address those objections in your copy on a website. So you anticipate, especially if a lot of people said the same thing or they're concerned about the same thing, that may be something you can address right there. So And so how do you understand your website's business? So you go through all this, and how do you actually use all of that research in your copy?
Great question. So to quickly summarize, what we've discussed so far were website surveys using a tool like Hotjar. You can also do user tests, which you can do yourself, just email your customers or your prospects. You can also just recruit people on social media or use a third-party service like usertesting.com. You can also set up an email survey, just set up a Google form or a type form, something like that, and email your customers, ask them to fill out the questions. And then you can also do the website surveys on the website itself. You had mentioned Hotjar previously and their heat maps. That's just one final piece of the puzzle that's super valuable. Is with a heat map, it shows where on the page people are clicking. So this is great for site optimization, but from a copywriting perspective, it's super valuable. Mm-hmm. So for example, let's say you have a long form sales page that's selling your service. On this long form sales page, the heat map, there's actually a few different kinds. There's what's called a scroll map. So it'll show how far down a page users are scrolling. So a long form sales page, this is dead useful because you're like, only 10% of people get halfway down the page. That's a problem. So that's super helpful. Then the second part is the click map. And this shows the elements that people are actively clicking on. Mm-hmm. So I'll start with the heat maps and then we can work back through the other tools. It's like, okay, the insights are coming in. How do we use this for copy? Heat maps are incredible from a copywriting perspective. If somebody's clicking on an element that's not doing anything, it usually means that they want more information. So for example, if they're clicking, like you have a bunch of bullets that highlight the benefits of your service. If you notice that one bullet in particular is getting a lot of clicks, that usually means that people aren't clear on what that is and they want more information. Okay. So a simple way to work around that is to add tooltips to those elements. This is something I used to test a bunch of times back in the day, and it won more often than not. So it's a nice way, the fancy term is progressive disclosure. So people see the bullets, but it doesn't take up more space on the page unless somebody hovers on that particular item. Then they get more information. So that works really well. Another one is if you have an FAQ section, copywriters, if we're doing long form, the FAQ is probably going to be farther down the page. If you notice that there's like one question or two questions in particular that's getting clicked a lot, that means people have that burning question. So try and address that proactively. Put it into your headline, your subheadline, somewhere above the fold so that it doesn't even become an objection. Because as we all know, like the greatest salespeople don't care about countering objections. The greatest salespeople are the ones that eliminate those objections before they even come up.
Right.
And heat maps are great for doing that.
What I always think about when I see somebody clicking on a button and they're not coming back, like say they just click off the site. Do you think that those, don't they call them exit pop-ups or something? Because when you go up to click off and then that box pops up, that like what you mentioned earlier, like what is it, you know, why are you leaving the site? What are typical reasons? Like is there kind of a something that you hear more often than not?
Absolutely. The universal objection, regardless of price point, is price. Somebody always says it's too expensive. I've seen that for $10,000 offers. I've seen that for $1 a month. So somebody's always mentioning that. And what I like to say is that, I forget who said it, but a cynic is somebody who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Yeah.
In this case, when people say, oh, the price is too high, it's not the price. It's that the perceived value is too low. And right. You need to do a better job of playing up that perceived value. So that's a very, very common one. But really, it's the long tail stuff that gets really, really valuable. You know, if you have 100 responses and you have like 3 to 5 responses about a few different things, you're like, oh, okay, I could easily hit all of these in 3 bullet points above the fold. Mm-hmm. And you can cross-reference that with what you see in the heat maps as well. So for example, if you're getting a lot of people in the website survey are saying, hey, I don't really understand. Do you offer free shipping or what are your shipping details? And then you go back and you look at the heat map and you're like, I explain all of the shipping details, but it's 3/4 of the way down the page. Very few people are clicking on it. Scroll map shows that only 20% of the people reach that. This is a problem.
Right.
Like I have the answer. It's there on the page, but people aren't seeing it. So the simple step is take that information, move it higher up the fold, and address that proactively.
And what's your opinion? Because you just reminded me of, we've all heard of call to action. Okay. So what do you think of call to value, which is something, have you heard that? I don't know if it's just my copywriting coach. So when you click on a button, instead of it taking you to like an action page or to do an action, it actually just moves you down the page. Are those helpful? Like what you just said, if somebody's looking for a particular thing and they want to know more about it and they click on a button, it brings them, it pulls you down into that area of the page, especially like a long form sales page. Are those helpful?
They can be. It really depends. So the call to value, as you put it, can be used to address something that is called a false bottom. And you can validate a false bottom looking at the scroll maps. If you have a long form page and you realize that the majority of people don't even scroll down, you may have a design issue that shows that people aren't aware that this is a long page. They may think it's just all above the fold. And I see this all the time with companies. Like they'll have these long, long pages with tons of content, but nobody knows it because they take that kind of standard like horizontal bar design. Yeah. So it's like you have the above the fold section with a horizontal bar. It just looks like that's all that's on the page. So there's a few simple design tweaks that you can do to address that. One is to, as you had, as you called it, the click to value. So if you have a button that says buy now or click here to read more, and then it just scrolls people down the page, that's a nice little nudge to get them moving.
Yeah.
And that works really well. You don't have to do that. Another way, real simple design tweak, is remove those horizontal sections. Like I really don't like those. They break up the visual hierarchy. Mm-hmm. So instead of having horizontal bars, the simplest thing is just visualize what a Google Doc looks like. And a Google Doc has the two vertical columns, one on either side. It's a white background where the text is, and then it's a gray background besides that. And visually, that tells people that there's further content. All they have to do is scroll down.
Right.
So that's a nice way to address it as well.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense because people, and I've heard that before too, or you know, people don't realize that there's much more to that page. What's your opinion on those long form sales pages? Because I heard that research shows and surveys show that they convert better, even though people complain about them. But you have buttons along the way. Like to me, if I'm on a long form sales page, it doesn't bother me. Like I'll just go to what, like say I really know I want the product. I'll scroll down to the bottom anyway. I mean, what's your take on those?
In general, long form will convert better. Like if all things are equal, if you have the same amount of research, the same amount of insights, and you say this page is twice as long as the other, but it's twice as long because we address literally everything we identified in the research, then yes, long form is absolutely the way to go. As a long form copywriter, that's where I got my chops. I worked as a copywriter. I moonlighted as a copywriter while I was working at Google. And I had the habit of writing really long. Like you read enough Gary Halbert, you start to get a little long-winded with stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So I found myself kind of going a little too into the weeds on things. So long form, absolutely. But focus less on the length of the page. Focus more on hitting everything you've identified in the research and making sure you're squashing all of those objections or proactively removing them. Just one final point too on the calls to action throughout the page. When I mentioned the click to value, those are buttons that click farther down the page. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, you can have calls to action throughout the page, which is buy now. By all means, do that. Mm-hmm. You should have calls to action throughout the page because that is very similar to what would happen in a one-on-one engagement. If you're speaking with a salesperson, they're going to ask for the sale a few times. Mm-hmm. Like we all know, you can't just ask for the sale at the end, twiddle your thumbs and be like, that's good enough.
Right.
Like you want to stay on task and people know, okay, I'm on this page. What can I learn here? What can I do here? And what should I do next? And if you can address those as quickly as possible with multiple CTAs, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. And that makes sense because sometimes you're going through the page and you think you want to buy, but it's like, well, I want a little more information. But I think people are afraid that if you're asking too much, that the person on the page, you know, the visitor is going to be annoyed. If they're on your page, they have a problem. They're looking for some solution. So if you present it in the right way, no one's going to, it's like sending a cold email, you know, you hear all the time, well, I don't want to annoy anybody. But if that person, if the timing is right, because that's usually what it is with cold pitches, they want to hear from you. You know, I used to hear that from editors when I wrote for magazines. It's like, we are, more than one editor had told me, we are waiting for a great idea. We're waiting for someone to pitch us an article that, you know, is really something no one else is talking about. So, yeah. Well, do you have any final words? Like, if someone is interested in, you know, getting better at the research or doing more, like, what kind of advice would you give to a copywriter, marketer, I guess both? I mean, they really kind of intersect.
I would say this all comes into two steps. The first step is set up as many mechanisms where you can get feedback and always collect that feedback. So we've already discussed quite a few. You want to set up heat maps, scroll maps, the website surveys, do user tests, as well as email surveys to your customers. All of this is going to give you a ton of data. And develop the habit of making changes to your website or your copy or your positioning as that feedback comes in. I'll just give you a couple quick examples. So we've talked about all these different methods. A lot of them are text-based. So you're going to get a lot of text coming your way. If you want to become a better copywriter, my number one tip is take all of those survey responses. In particular, some great questions that you can ask is, what convinced you to buy from us? Mm-hmm. As well as, what almost stopped you from buying? And my personal favorite for a copywriter is, imagine describing my solution to a friend or a colleague. So let's just play a game. Tell me in your exact words, how would you say it? And then you can take those responses, put them into a word cloud, like Wordle or Worded Out. You can just Google like word cloud generator to do this. Throw all of the text in there and it'll create a nice word map that shows you what words are most commonly used.
Oh,
boom.
Cool.
There you've got your headline. There you've got your subheadline. You've got your main objections. And there's a big difference when somebody talks about like price versus cost versus investment. Those are different mindsets. And if you know that everybody's using the word price, use that in your copy because mm-hmm. you're speaking the conversation in their minds already.
Right.
So that's a super easy thing that you can do. And then use all these different approaches and look for overlaps. Try to cross-reference what you've learned from user tests. Maybe somebody said something on a user test and you're like, you know what? 20% of people have said that in the surveys as well. Like, we need to figure out a way to address this. Talk to the user like during the interview and just say, hey, you had mentioned that. Here's an alternative. What if we did it this way? Would that work? And kind of get a vibe for what they think about that.
Right. I mean, what I love is that all this research takes out the guesswork. Otherwise, you're just throwing stuff against the wall. Let's see if this works. And like you said at the beginning, if you're just starting with testing, you're not basing it on anything. So you're going to have to go back anyway and do some research. I mean, if you really want to convert anybody, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like you do the research up front and it makes your split tests that much more viable and valuable. Or you don't do it and you set up split tests and you just blindly guess. And what happens with most people is they try that, they lose 10 in a row and they're like, ah, this is worthless. Nothing matters.
Right.
And they become like marketing nihilists.
Yeah.
It's like, there's so many things that you can and should be doing, but there's probably only three or four that really matter. And you need to find that out by getting out of the building, talking to your prospects and talking to your customers.
And as a copywriter, I know when I get pushback from a client that says, hey, maybe they say, I don't like the way this is worded. If I can back it up with, hey, this is what your customers are telling me, it's, you can validate it instead of just saying, well, I like it, but it's not a matter of liking it. It's a matter of backing it up with actual insights and everything that you talked about. So this has been great. Where can people find you and find out more about Funnel Candy? And now that we know that it's not Willy Wonka thing.
Yeah. If you wanted to take our free 7-week research class, you can visit us at funnelcandy.com/research. And like I said, it's a 7-week class. You get 2 lessons per week that highlights exactly how you can gather all of this feedback and then shows you what to do with all that feedback as it comes in. So once again, that's at funnelcandy.com/research. And I'm also on LinkedIn as well. I know that's where you and I met.
Yeah.
And yeah, so you can follow me on LinkedIn as well.
That's cool. I think you're on YouTube too. I saw some of your videos there. Is that part of the Funnel Candy flow?
Yeah. Yeah, we are on YouTube. Put quite a few of our videos on there as well.
Okay, cool. Because yeah, some people like that. Well, this has been great. I really appreciate all the time and all the great advice, Adam. This has been an eye-opening interview. So thanks so much.
Oh yeah. Thank you for having me, Linda.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and engaging. If so, please share it with your friends and colleagues who might also be interested in marketing and copywriting trends and innovations. And remember, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the B2B Marketing and Copywriting Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and on our YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. We'll be back next week with another show, so stay tuned.